Ollie smiled faintly at the question, but shook his head. Nay, in fact, I came to warn you to stay in your room.
Oh?
She asked, her eyebrows rising. Aye, he said solemnly. I believe your attacker is in the keep and we're about to hunt them up, but I do not want you in harm's way. So, you're to stay here. I've told the guards not to let you leave the room. He added, fully expecting her to either insist on being allowed to help in the search, or to put up a fuss about being restricted to a room. This, after all, was the woman who had roared at him and even cursed in the stables when he'd tried to get her to go to safety and leave him to handle the horses and fire alone. However, Jetta smiled sweetly and simply said,
"Very well."
Ollie's eyebrows rose slightly, but he said, "Good," and started to release her, but she held on to his plaid and pursed her lips in a moo.
"Will you not kiss me before you go, husband?"
"Aye, of course," Ollie murmured, wondering that he hadn't on his own and had needed the coaxing. Of course, he did have a lot on his mind just now, what with everyone waiting out in the hall for him to start the search. He excused himself as he bent to kiss her. Feeling guilty about her having to coax the kiss out of him, it was no light peck in parting. Ollie gave her one of his full-on, deep, hungry, devouring, suck-the-meat-from-between-your-teeth kisses. Apparently, Jetta hadn't been expecting that, for other than sack against his chest and wrap her arms around his neck as if he were the only thing holding her up, she didn't really respond. However, she clung to him with both arms and lips and moaned a protest when he broke the kiss and set her away. Smiling at her dazed expression and heaving chest, Ollie turned toward the door to the room she'd been busy in when he entered and gave her a gentle push. "Now, off with you. I'll be back as soon as I can. Hopefully with news I've caught your attacker."
"Aye,"
Jetta said breathily. She'd filled in some, Ollie thought as he watched her bottom as she walked away. Pleased that she was regaining some of the weight she'd lost and amused by her breathlessness and unsteady gait as she walked toward the door, Ollie teased. "Whether I have to or no, though, I'll be claiming those husbandly rights you mention."
"I shall look forward to you pleasuring me,"
she breathed, and he saw her shoulders rise slightly toward her neck as a shiver slid down her back. His smile a bit bemused, Ollie turned and left the room, trying as he went to think why that had felt all wrong. He was perhaps halfway to the group of people waiting for him by the top of the stairs when it struck him, and he froze in his tracks. "Ollie?" Blinking at that concerned voice, Ollie peered at the man leading the group toward him and immediately frowned. "Conran? What the devil are you doing here? I sent you out to..." "Alex horse threw a shoe ere we even got off Buchanan land. So I took him up on my horse and we led the beast back. We came in to tell you what happened while we waited for the stable master to shoe his mount. And the others told us what was occurring here instead. We thought you might want us to stay to help with the search for Jetta's sister." "Hey," Holly said, nodding, and then shook his head. "Nay. Nay, you didn't want us to help?" Conran asked with surprise. "Nay, there's no need for a search," Ollie corrected grimly. "I'm quite sure I've found my wife's sister. In fact, I believe I just kissed her," he said with a grimace, and wasn't surprised by the uproar that caused. "You kissed her? You kissed the attacker? You kissed your own wife's sister?
Are you mad?"
Wincing at the cacophony of questions, Ollie said dryly, "Well, I didn't know Ken it was her at the time. I thought her Jetta." Glancing back toward the master bedchamber door, he frowned and suggested, "Perhaps we'd best move further along the hall to talk."
"I cannae believe you could no tell she was not Jetta and kissed her."
said Grumbold as they reached the far end of the hall and paused. Ollie blew out his breath on a sigh and nodded. I should have kenned sooner, but in my own defence, she was in the room when I left Jetta with guards to prevent Jetta leaving and anyone entering, and she was wearing Jetta's gown. The one she was wearing this morning and the one she was wearing when I left her earlier.
Oh, Sade said solemnly. That is not good.
Aye, Ollie agreed. He'd only realised that as he'd said it, and now pondered it with concern.
Are you sure 'tis Jetta's sister?
Alec asked.
Mayhap 'tis really Jetta this time.
I am sure, Ollie assured him. She is mayhap half a stone heavier than Jetta, which is about where Jetta was in weight when we found her. Aye, she lost a good stone while sick and has gained perhaps half of that back, Rory murmured. Ollie nodded. And the lass I just kissed, while wearing the right dress to be Jetta, was nowhere in her call and had no bald spot. Oh. Everyone nodded solemnly. There was no mistaking her for Jetta if she had all her hair. Then this sister kens about the passages, Greer said solemnly. Ollie nodded unhappily as he realized Greer was right. She must. It is the only way she could have got in the room with the guards at the door.
Which means Jetta may not even be in there,
Sade said with a grim expression. What? Ollie turned to his sister with alarm.
Well, you obviously did not see her in the room, she said,
and when he nodded that she was right, continued.
And the sister is wearing Jetta's gown. The only reason I can think that she would do that is so that she might move freely through the castle, which she could do if we thought her Jetta, she pointed out. So this twin may have made Jetta take off her dress, donned it herself and then forced her into the passages and out through the tunnel and...
Mouth tightening, she avoided Ollie's eyes, and instead of finishing, asked,
Why would the sister return? Why would she want to move freely through the castle once she... had Jetta?
Ollie had no idea, and nothing was coming to his mind, mostly because he was sifting through Sade's words. Kat hadn't been trying to kidnap Jetta before now. She'd been trying to kill her. And he suspected that was what Sade had not said. That Jetta had been made to strip, forced out of the castle through the passages and tunnel, and then killed. Ollie turned abruptly, intending to head back to the master bedchamber. He was desperate to see if Jetta was in the baby's room. She couldn't be dead. Ollie, wait, Cam said firmly, catching his arm. You can no just go marching back in there. You might be jeopardizing Jetta. You said the sister came out of the baby's room. Jetta may be in there, but she may not. And if she is not, then we might do better to pretend we believe the sister is Jetta and follow her to find where Jetta is. Cam is right, Greer said solemnly. We need to see if Jetta is in there ere we do anything. Is there a passage entrance in the little room as well? Aye. Dougal said as Ollie tugged free of Cam's hold and started moving again, this time heading for the door just a few steps away. It was the door to Neil's and Edith's room, and he didn't bother knocking but thrust the door open and strode in. What the devil? Neil's barked, freezing in the middle of pulling on a fresh shirt. Yanking it down into place, he grabbed up a plaid to cover himself up and scowled at the lot of them. Have you ne'er heard of knocking?
What has happened?
Edith asked anxiously, turning from the window to peer at them with concern.
Please tell me you've caught the attacker, else Niels is determined to help you find him.
Nay, but I'm about to. Ollie growled as he continued to the passage entrance and quickly opened it. Your eyes are back to normal, Greer commented behind him, presumably to Niels. How are you feeling? Much better, Niels said quietly. What's happening?
We're about to catch Jetta's sister,
Alec said, directly behind Ollie, and the words made him freeze with one foot in the passage and one in the room. Turning back, he scowled. We're not doing anything, he said firmly. I'm going to sneak into the baby's room and see if Jetta is there. The rest of you will wait here. What if they are both in the baby's room? Cam asked at once. You can no just go barging in. The sister could slit Jetta's throat ere you got to them.
Ollie's not an idiot. He's not just going to barge in,
Sid said with exasperation.
He'll check the no holes first to be sure 'tis safe to enter.
The what? Ollie asked with bewilderment. He had been intending on just barging in.
The no holes,
she repeated, her brow knitting as she took in his expression.
The spy holes. Ma called them no holes when she showed them to me because they let you know what's happening in the rooms.
We have spy holes, he asked with disbelief.
Aye.
Her eyebrows rose.
Surely you kenned that.
Nay, he snapped and then glanced to his brothers. Did any of you? Nay, they all said together, shaking their heads and looking rather put out themselves. Well, hell, he growled, turning back to his sister. Why were we not told about them? I should have been told at least. I am the laird of this keep. Sid shrugged unapologetically.
Ma told me. I just assumed she or Da had told the rest of you. I think I know why,
Joe said thoughtfully, drawing all eyes her way. Ollie's eyebrows rose. How would you ken why our parents did not tell us about the spy holes and only told Sid? He asked, more curious than anything.
Because I have a son,
Joe said dryly, and then asked,
I presume you were lads when you were told about the passages.
They all nodded.
How old?
She asked at once. 5 or 6, Ollie answered at once. Aye, Dougal agreed. What has that to do with anything? Rather than answer, Joe asked,
if as a lad there had been a visitor to the keep, say a beautiful buxom blonde or a curvy redhead you'd thought attractive, and if our maid sent for a bath within your hearing,
she added,
would ye or would ye not have slipped into the passages to peek through the spy holes at her?
Affronted, Ollie opened his mouth to answer, but Joe held up her hand to forestall him.
I am asking all of you Buchanan boys, and I do not mean now would you look, but when you were a young lad of 12 or so, would you have tried to get a peek then?
Ollie hesitated and then exchanged glances with his brother before admitting, on a sigh, aye, even as his brothers did. But, he added, 'tis the kind of thing lads do. Joe nodded as if that was exactly what she'd expected.
And that is why you were not told as children.
Turning to Cam, then, she added,
and that is also why we will not tell our sons about the spy holes in the passages at St. Clair until they are adults and can be trusted not to look unless necessary.
There are spy holes in the passages at St. Clair? Cam asked with amazement.
Aye, your mother showed them to me after we married,
she announced. What? He asked with disbelief. Why did she or father never tell me about them? When Jo shrugged her shoulders helplessly, Dougal suggested, mayhap they're waiting until you're an adult and can be trusted not to look. Cam stiffened, but then nodded solemnly. Aye, and no doubt that is why your parents ne'er told ye ere they died, and why your uncle still hasn't. Ollie almost cracked a smile at the exchange of taunts, but in the end he didn't. No one did. They were all too aware that Jetta was in jeopardy. Or possibly dead. Where are the spy holes? He asked Sid sharply, impatient to see if Jetta was all right.
They are those small stones sticking out of the wall,
Sid explained.
There are dozens of them along the walls at different heights. The stones pluck out easy as you please, revealing a pinhole you can see through into the room.
Nodding, Ollie turned to finish stepping into the passage, but paused again as someone bumped against him and he realized everyone had crowded forward, intending to follow him. Even Edith and Niels were moving toward the passage, he saw, and it was Alec who'd bumped into him.
"I am going alone," he growled. "The rest of you stay here."
"You might need help," Dougal argued at once.
"I'll be fine, and the bunch of you will make too much noise," he argued.
"We'll be quiet as mice,"
Alec assured him.
"Ollie,"
Sade said quietly.
"If she dies because you refused help, you'll never forgive yourself. And I may no forgive you either. I really like Jetta."
Ollie closed his eyes briefly, but then gave in with a sigh.
"Fine, but you can no make a sound."
When every one of them nodded solemnly, Ollie turned and led the way into the passage. It was the splash of cold water that roused Jetta. Blinking her eyes open with alarm, she peered anxiously about, and then froze as she spotted Caitlin and recalled her situation.
"Finally,"
Kat said, tossing aside the empty pitcher she held.
"I thought you would never wake up."
Jetta eyed her with dislike.
"I suppose it was too much to hope that your presence at Buchanan was just a nightmare. Oh, my."
Kat's eyes widened in surprise and delight.
"The kitty has developed claws. When did you find courage, sister? You never would have spoken to me like that at Fitton."
Jetta just shook her head and closed her eyes. She had no intention of getting into a battle with her sister. She had refused to do it when they were children, growing up, and then as an adult, not because of a lack of courage, but because it upset their mother. She wouldn't do it now because she needed to think on how to escape. Getting her sister talking so that she could do that was more likely to aid her than wasting her thoughts on trading insults. Determined to keep her talking, she asked,
"Are you not going to finish telling me what happened after you and father left me on the ship?"
There was a pause, and Jetta began to worry her sister would not continue talking, but would move on to whatever she planned to do next. And then Kat said,
"Aye, where was I?" "You were on Lecoq,"
Jetta said at once, and when Kat did not immediately begin speaking again, asked abruptly,
"Did you trade your body to the captain to escape marrying the Marquis? Is that how you came to be here?" "Nay, he was more interested in his first mate than me,"
she said with disgust.
"So you remained strapped to the mast all the way to the south of France?"
Jetta asked, coaxing her along.
"Nay, the captain claimed he was afraid of another storm coming along and stealing his profits. Once we were far enough away from port that I could not possibly swim to freedom, he untied me from the mast and tied me to his bed in his cabin instead."
Jetta stiffened, her head coming up.
"His bed? He did not rape me?"
Kat finished for her when she hesitated to ask. Sneering, she said,
"Nay, did I not mention he was more interested in his first mate?"
"Oh, aye. She murmured.
"Anyway,"
Caitlin continued,
"the trip was uneventful and short. It only took 5 hours. There was not a whisper of a storm, but the wind was up. Mostly I was bored during the journey, and then we landed. The captain untied me, ordered me to clean myself up, and after informing me that he had stationed a man outside the window and would stand guard at the door himself to ensure I did not escape, he locked me in his cabin."
"What did you do?"
Jetta asked, her fingers working feverishly at the knots in the rope binding her, despite the certainty she had that it was impossible. The binding was too tight, making it hard to reach much of the rope to work at it.
"What could I do? I prepared myself to meet my doom,"
Kat said dryly.
"By that point I had become resigned to my fate. I would marry the Marquis and become a marchioness, and pray he did not hurt me.
Did he hurt you?
Jetta asked quietly. Kat stared at her icily for a moment before speaking again. And when she did, it was not to answer the question. She simply continued with her story.
The Marquis was not waiting at the docks as expected. But then the ship was 2 days late thanks to the storm and your escape. So the captain hired a wagon and a maid to accompany us for propriety's sake, and delivered me to the Marquis personally.
She fell silent again, and Jet appeared at her, wondering what she was thinking. Now that she had her memories back, Jetta suspected she had never really known her sister, and that much had been hidden under all her fluff and flounce. Certainly, despite Kat's often selfish ways, Jetta had been completely flummoxed to find herself bound to Lecoq's mast, and even that had not prepared her for finding herself in this situation. The woman before her was not the sister she'd thought she knew growing up. This woman was empty and cold, and really rather scary.
He was beautiful,
Kat said finally, and there was wonder in her voice.
Truly, I have never seen a more beautiful man. His hair was like spun gold, and his eyes as blue as a cloudless sky. When he smiled, it was enough to make a saint weep.
Meeting her gaze, she added,
And he was so charming and kind. I expected the wedding to take place right away, but he told me it would not be for a week, that he had arranged it that way for my benefit. He wanted me to feel comfortable with him before we became man and wife.
Meeting Jetta's gaze, she asked,
Is that not the kindest thing you have ever heard? It was kind,
Jetta allowed, and did not tell her Ollie had shown her much more kindness saving her life, pretending to be her husband to make her feel safe and comfortable enough to heal, and in 100 other ways since she'd washed up on his shores.
That was truly the most wondrous week of my life.
Caitlin went on in an almost dreamy voice.
Compliments rolled off his tongue like honey. He proclaimed himself the most fortunate of men to have me to wife. I was the most beautiful woman he had ever seen. I would give him the loveliest children. He looked forward to our future together with excitement and wonder.
Smiling softly, she said,
I actually fell in love with him that week. I thought your death was fortuitous, that God had surely arranged it so that I would have to marry this man who had obviously been made just for me. I could see my life before me, and it would be just like a fairy tale. And the wedding?
She exclaimed with remembered delight.
The Marquis had planned and prepared in advance. It was not rushed and tawdry like yours.
Jetta stiffened at that description of her wedding to Ollie. It may have been rushed, but there had been nothing tawdry about it in her mind.
My wedding was beautiful,
Caitlin continued.
That week he arranged for a dress to be made for me, and it was the most glorious concoction I had ever seen. He spared no expense on the food and drink, and arranged for minstrels and entertainers to come from far and wide. It was like a dream,
she breathed.
And then came time for the bedding. I was excited and nervous. But rather than bed me, he said he could see I was afraid and would give me one more night to adjust to my new home, and to him as husband. And then he cut his own hand and smeared the blood on the linens for the priest to find in the morning. But he did not leave the bed,
she assured her.
He wrapped his arms around me and held me all night, as if I was the most precious creature alive.
Meeting Jetta's gaze, she said solemnly,
I fell asleep feeling cherished and loved, and woke up thinking myself the most fortunate woman in the world.
Kat paused, as if to savor that feeling for a moment, and then continued.
Of course, the next day all our guests left. They had already stayed more than a week, longer than expected, so every one of our guests was gone by the sup. Frankly, I was happy to see them go. I was eager to spend time with my new husband. But eventually everyone was gone. We sat down to sup, and then my sweet husband escorted me up to our room, and my true wedding night began. And my lovely dream turned into a nightmare.
Jetta blinked, but remained silent, leaving her to tell it in her own time.
My beautiful Marquis, with the honeyed tongue, vanished, and a cruel, monstrous beast took his place. My wedding night became one long week of unending torture and depravity.
Her gaze met Jetta's, and for a moment the Caitlin she'd known as a child was there, peering out of her eyes. Young, vulnerable, bewildered, she said.
He hurt me, and enjoyed the hurting. He did things.
Shuddering, Kat turned her face away as she confessed.
At first I tried to hide it from the servants and soldiers, that he was hurting me. But after the second or third night, I could not hide the bruises and burns. They were everywhere, and the servants and soldiers began to eye me with pity. I bore that for a week. But then torturing me in our chamber was not enough. He dragged me naked down to the great hall, and beat and raped me on the trestle table for all to see.
Jetta gasped in horror, but Kat wasn't done.
When he was finished, he rolled me off the table to the floor to lie with the dogs, as he said I deserved, and then he pissed on me. Oh, Kat,
Jetta breathed with horror, and Caitlin's head whipped around like a striking snake. Fury, all that was left of her.
Shut up!
She shrieked with rage.
It should have been you! It should have been you who suffered all of that disgusting...
She inhaled sharply and turned away again. After a moment, she continued in a calm, uncaring voice.
Anyway, by that time, I was...
Turning back, she gave a wry smile and said,
Well, frankly, by that time, I was so battered and bruised, and appeared so weak, no one even imagined that I had anything to do with his falling down the stairs and breaking his neck on the way back to our room.
Chapter 20 Jetta stared at her sister, her thoughts in an uproar as what Caitlin had revealed whirled in her mind. She could not begin to imagine what Kat had gone through, and didn't want to. No one deserved to go through that, and Jetta was very aware that she would have suffered that fate herself, had Providence not intervened. So she was not sorry that the Marquis was dead. In fact, she took comfort in the knowledge that he could never again hurt Kat or anyone else. For Jetta was sure a man such as that had not restricted his tortures to just his first wife and Kat, or even females alone. However, Jetta was more concerned about Kat herself. She was just a ball of pain, buried under rage as far as she could tell. But the lightning-quick way her fury came on and just as quickly seemed to disappear troubled Jetta a great deal. She was certain she now understood Kat and what she was doing a little better. While her sister had been selfish and spoiled before, she was now broken, and she suspected very, very dangerous. Taking a deep breath, Jetta released it slowly and simply said,
You pushed him down the stairs.
Caitlin's mouth twisted with bitterness.
and got absolutely nothing for my trouble. Everything was left to some cousin twice removed. The title, the castle, all that money. Everything. Even my dower.
She added with outrage, and scowled as she continued.
The new Marquis arrived to be titled 4 days later, and wanted nothing to do with me. As far as he was concerned, I was an interloper. A week to the day after I killed my husband, the new Marquis handed me over to Captain Casey.
Jetta gave a start of surprise, and Kat smiled bitterly.
Aye, the very same captain who delivered me to France. Bastard,
she added.
I shall have to pay him a visit when I am finished here.
Jetta forced herself not to react. But inside she was thinking, oh God, oh God, oh God. Kat was more than broken. She was completely and utterly mad if she planned to go about killing everyone she had imagined had done her a wrong. Jetta had not liked Captain Casey either, but in the end he had just been doing his job. Delivering who he thought was a young girl to her betrothed, an unwilling young woman. But the betrothal contract had been real.
I was still in bad shape, Kat went on. But the new Marquis could not be rid of me quick enough. He handed me over to the captain with nothing but a sack of coins. Even the jewels I was given as a wedding gift were taken from me. They were family jewels, and were to go to the new Marquis's wife. I was still battered and bruised, but the Marquis had arranged with the captain to have me returned home, and we sailed back. Again, Captain Casey was to deliver me himself. But he had things to do first, so had one of his men go out and rent a wagon and put me in it. And then they just left me lying in the damn thing, for hours, with the sailor to guard me, until the captain was ready. That is when I found out you were still alive, Kat said with a bitter smile. I was lying in the bottom of the wagon, wrapped in furs, waiting impatiently for the captain to arrive, and a young man came along. He asked my guard if any ships had sunk in that storm a little more than 3 weeks back. My guard asked why he was asking, and he said he'd heard that a mast had been found floating about and thought perhaps a ship sank. My guard assured him he had heard of nothing of the like, and the young man went away. It was not long after that when the captain finally deigned to show himself. The guard told him what had transpired. They wondered if it was not their mast, and thought it must be, but decided you obviously had not been still on it, or it would have been mentioned. But I knew, she said with satisfaction. I just felt it in my bones, that that young man or someone connected to him had found you and you were still alive. But how did you know where I was? Jetta asked at once. My guard recognized the man who had questioned him as one of the Buchanans. He told the captain they all looked alike, but he thought it was the youngest one, Alec.
Jetta closed her eyes on a sigh. But then still does it suddenly occur to her that Caitlin had known all along that she hadn't bribed the captain, or escaped the ship. Kat knew the mast had ripped away, taking her with it. It seemed she needed to blame her for her woes in whatever way she could find.
The captain delivered me home that evening, Kat continued. Father pretended to be glad to see me alive and well. He claimed he had just known I would come out all right. I smiled and nodded, and suggested we celebrate my return.
Caitlin offered her a smile that was all teeth.
He tried to say nay at first, but I insisted. We had to toast my survival, after all. Eventually, he agreed and I had the whiskey brought out. We toasted to my survival, and then I insisted we toast to your sad passing, and then Mother's, and so on. I did not drink my own whiskey, but made sure he drank his.
Pausing, she glanced upward as if trying to remember, and said thoughtfully,
I think that it was probably the 7th or 8th whiskey that I put the poison in. And then I insisted on one final toast, to his health, and watched him die.
Jetta's head jerked up as if a string had been yanked.
You killed our father. With pleasure.
Kat growled.
Why?
Jetta asked with amazement. Her father had given Kat everything she had ever wanted, including shipping Jetta off in Kat's place to marry the Marquis at Kat's urging.
I was very angry with him,
Kat growled, her fury flashing briefly. And then it was gone again, and she added mildly,
Besides, he was not drinking himself to death as I expected once you were gone. In fact, he was hardly drinking at all any more. Where Mother's death made him drink, news of your so-called death seemed to sober him up. He stopped drinking altogether, except for a stein of ale at the sup.
Her mouth tightened, but her tone was still light when she said,
Until the night he died.
Jetta bowed her head. Her sister was more than insane. Killing the Marquis was one thing, but their father was quite another. He had been her comrade at arms in the effort to ship Jetta off in place of Kat.
Of course the healer said it was the drink, and congratulated himself for being right when he had warned Father that drink would be the death of him. I just tried to look sad and nodded.
Grinning, she added.
And suddenly, I owned everything. I am the lady at Fitton, mistress of all.
The king will appoint a new guardian until a marriage is arranged for you,
Jetta predicted quietly.
He already has. Father's brother, Uncle Albert.
Jetta gaped at her.
But Uncle Albert is mad, suffering woodness.
Kat suggested with a smile.
Aye, he is, which works to my advantage. He is always off with his books, trying to prove that the devil exists, which leaves me to do as I wish.
She shrugged.
So, I am in control. He allows me my way in all things. In fact, he has probably not noticed that I'm not at Fitton at present. That is the amount of freedom I now have. He cares not how I spend coin or what I do with my time.
Then why are you here?
Jetta asked, suspecting she knew the answer, but seriously hoping she was wrong.
Why are you not at Fitton, enjoying your new freedom? Because there is still you,
she said.
You are as much at fault for what I suffered as father. If you had not escaped your fate and forced me to take your place, I would not have suffered the Marquis's abuse and depravities. It was not my fate, So I decided I would come find and kill you too.
Caitlin continued.
The first morning I arrived, I saw who I thought was you frolicking in the woods with whom I presumed was the laird here. She had the same hair as us, and very similar features too. I can only think Father made his way up here at some point 15 or 16 years ago and got some maid with child. The lass looked a lot like us. At least, she did from a distance. By the time I got close enough to see her, they were on horseback and riding for the castle. I followed and shot her ere they went through the castle gate.
Jetta swallowed. Caitlin had always been an excellent shot with the bow and arrow.
You shot a maid. Named Katie. Not me.
I found out later.
She admitted dryly and grimaced.
Shortly after I shot who I thought was you, a soldier came charging out of the gates. I knew it had to have something to do with my arrow, so I followed him. I was trying to think of a way to find out what had happened, if you were dead or not. I had just decided that I would wait until he stopped for the night and make him tell me at knife point. When he arrived at the lodge. An old woman was coming out and he talked to her. Told her the maid Katie was shot while riding with Geordie, and Rory was needed. I was sore disappointed, she admitted on a sigh. But then the old woman said Rory and the master were down breaking their fast at the beach with the young English lass.
Caitlin clucked her tongue.
I had a feeling again, the same one I had when I heard young Alec asking around about any ships that sank. So I followed the messenger to the beach, and there you were.
Shaking her head, she said,
you were terribly thin, skeletal, and you were wearing the most ridiculous outfit, too. But you were laughing, and there was color in your cheeks, and you looked like you were having a grand time.
Smile dying, she added angrily.
Like you had been having a grand time the whole time I was suffering. I was unconscious for weeks, Cat. I had only woken up less than 2 weeks before that, probably about the same time you were delivered home. And that day at the beach was the first time I'd left the room since I woke up in. I had no memories. I thought Ollie my husband.
She said dubiously and shrugged.
At any rate, the messenger and Rory left at once, but you two packed up and headed back to the lodge. Only Ollie left right away to follow Rory. After he left, I slipped inside while you and the old maid were still above stairs. There was a pot of stew boiling over the fire, and I dumped some poison in, hoping that would do the trick. After giving it a good stir, I slipped back outside and went and found a nearby spot to camp and rest a bit while I waited for you to eat the stew. I returned later that night, expecting to find you and the old woman dead. Instead, there were men everywhere, and the only thing dead was a dog,
she said with disgust. Jetta didn't explain that the stew had charred over the fire and been tossed out. Why bother?
Of course, with Akair and the men there, I did not dare stick around. I could hardly blend in with soldiers, so I retreated to my camp to try to decide what to do. And it was there I recalled the plaid you had dropped. The plaid?
Jetta echoed with confusion.
Aye. You dropped it on the beach ere leaving when the storm struck after your picnic.
Oh, Jetta murmured. Recalling, no. Ollie was actually the one who had dropped the plaid, and she'd almost thought he'd rush back for it when he realized, but the rain was coming down so heavy. She'd been relieved when he left it and they'd headed back to the lodge. Jetta had assumed he'd fetch it later, but then he'd left for Buchanan and she hadn't given it another thought. Now, she asked.
What use was the plaid to you? Well, I could hardly slip into Buchanan in my expensive gown, could I?
She asked dryly.
That plaid is how I managed to slip in without notice. I made an arrasich of it, gathered some rushes, lavender and other plants on my way back to Buchanan, and then left my horse tethered in the woods and simply walked into Buchanan with my weeds as if I belonged there. No one gave me a second glance, not even the men on the wall. And why would they? I was just an innocent young lass.
Suddenly tired beyond words, Jetta decided to speed this along and said,
You pushed me down the stairs.
Cat shrugged.
It worked with my husband. You hid in a chest in the hall afterward to avoid discovery.
Startled, she scowled and asked,
How did you know that? You dropped father's ballock knife. While you were hiding in there, we found it later. Oh, I wondered where that had gone. I brought it, hoping to use it on you. I lay awake each night here, imagining what I would do to you with it. We are sisters, Cat,
Jetta said desperately.
More than sisters. Twins. And yet you hate me and...
Of course I do,
she bellowed.
You escaped Lecoq, forcing me to marry the Marquis. He was your betrothed,
Jetta bellowed right back.
And I escaped nothing, as you very well know. I was tied to the mast, and it was ripped from the ship as if God himself reached down and tore it off. God?
Cat sneered.
Now will you try to claim God saved you? Where was he when I needed him then? Why did he not kill my husband ere I had to marry him? Or ensure I was betrothed to someone else to begin with? Someone young, strong, handsome and virile? Perhaps he did try to give you a husband who was young, strong, handsome and virile.
Jetta argued.
What?
Cat asked with confusion, and then snapped impatiently.
What are you driveling on about now? It occurs to me that had you not connived to make me marry the Marquis in your place, and had you been on Lecoq the first time instead of me, it would have been you on the mast that tore from the ship and floated up to the shore near Ollie's lodge. And had that happened, it might now be you married to him and enjoying the benefits of a young, strong, very handsome and incredibly virile husband who is also kind and would never even think of hurting you. Come to think of it.
She added, no.
Mayhap I should thank you for your perfidy. For I owe every happiness I have enjoyed to date to your conniving and convincing father to send me to the Marquis in your place.
Cat's eyes narrowed, and then she gave a hard laugh.
Your husband is far from handsome. I may have married a man who was monstrous, indeed, but yours is monstrous to look at. Frankly, I do not understand how you can bear to let him touch you. I like his face and find him handsome,
Jetta said unperturbed.
To me he is the most beautiful man I have ever met. Of course you would think so,
Cat said with derision.
You always preferred the flawed to the flawless. I once told Mother I was sure you were blind, but she said nay, that you found beauty in imperfection.
She rolled her eyes to show her opinion of that, and then her mouth compressed and she seemed to struggle briefly before admitting.
Although I will concede that he seems very virile. The things he did to you in the stables, the way you moaned, cried out and thrashed about as he did them.
She gave a little shiver at the memory and said,
It made me think that mayhap the bedding did not have to be so painful and humiliating. It made me want to experience that pleasure myself. You watched us. In the stables.
Jetta gasped with horror.
Where do you think I was sleeping up until then?
She asked tightly.
I could hardly sleep in the keep and risk you seeing and recognizing me. Others might have been fooled by the dirt I smeared on my face and my covering my hair, but I knew you would not. So I slept up in the hayloft and had a perfect view of both your wedding and the two of you consummating it afterward. And then you locked us in and set the fire.
Jetta said, her own voice a little cold.
Aye.
Cat made the admission with no remorse.
The moment you fell asleep, I crept down, started the fire, and blocked the doors so you could not escape.
Mouth twisting bitterly, she added.
But, of course, you did. Again.
When Jetta just glared at her, she eyed her back for a moment and then smiled cruelly and said,
But perhaps that has worked out to my advantage in the end, because I have to say, sister, I think I will enjoy having your Ollie pleasure me before I kill him. What?
Jetta asked sharply. Cat shrugged.
It's not as if I need to rush home after killing you. I still want to kill Captain Casey, but there is no rush. I can dally here a day or two and taste the pleasure you've been enjoying before I slit the Buchanan's throat while he sleeps. What?
Jetta asked with amazement.
Why would you kill Ollie? Because he gave you pleasure while I suffered.
Cat said furiously. And then shrugged that fury away like it was a pesky fly that had landed on her shoulder, and added,
It only seems fair that he give me some of that pleasure, too, before I punish him.
Relaxing suddenly, Jetta shook her head.
Nay, you will not.
You said he had a monstrous face and you did not understand how I could let him touch me.
She reminded her.
I did. And 'tis true, which is why originally I intended to try it on with one of the brothers.
She admitted.
Of course, I did not want them to remember it, so I dropped a few weeds and herbs in a pitcher of ale, covered my hair, muddied my face, and took it out to set in front of Conran. Unfortunately, Alec grabbed it and challenged Niels to a drinking contest, and the two of them drank it all. Conran did not even get a sip of the concoction.
She said with irritation. Smiling again, she announced,
But I have since decided that might have been fortuitous. Unfortunately, Edith was in bed with Niels, so I went to Alec first. I tried to get him to bed me, but even drugged and brainless, he had too many scruples and would have naught to do with bedding his brother's wife.
Of course I would not, Alec muttered with disgust beside Ollie in the dark passage, and he punched him in the arm for speaking. Although he was surprised at how quiet they had all managed to be. Aside from the occasional horrified gasp or disgusted tisk, everyone had remained silent, enthralled by the tale told. Even he was. It was the only reason he had not yet slid along the wall to the entrance to the passage from the bedchamber and gone to save his wife.
You tried to seduce Alec?
He heard Jetta ask with dismay and turned back to his spyhole as she protested.
He is just a boy.
Knowing his brother as he did, Ollie quickly covered Alec's mouth with his hand, muffling the outraged squawk that followed that comment. When Alec's furious eyes swiveled his way, he whispered, Quiet as mice, remember? Unable to speak, Alec nodded. Sighing his relief, Ollie turned back to the hole as Cat continued.
"'Twas probably for the best. I do not think it would have worked anyway. I learned from the few kisses I managed to coax out of him that he's a sloppy kisser. I did not feel even a touch of the passion you seemed to experience with Ollie."
Ollie turned sharply on Alec, but this time Dougal had acted more swiftly and covered their brother's mouth. "'You kissed my wife!' he demanded in a kiss. "'He kissed Cat, not Jetta,' Dougal said soothingly. "'And most like no willingly. You heard her say he refused her.' Ollie growled low in his throat, but turned back to the hole again.
"'But the night was not a complete waste.'
Cat commented.
I got him to show me the entrance to the passages. He was very gullible, or perhaps the weeds made him tractable. I told him Ollie said he should, and he did. He showed me the one in his room, and then he took me through the passages to the entrance to the stairs, and then the tunnel, and all the way out to the cave and back. And then he told me how to open the passage to each room as we passed.
She grimaced.
I had to shush him a time or two, for fear he would wake those in the rooms. But we got away with it. And then there was Niels.
Cat continued, and Ollie tore his eye from the hole to glance worriedly along the line of dark shapes, trying to see Edith. He suspected she would be the one upset by what was coming, and hoped to God Niels had the good sense to silence her when that happened.
It was morning ere I could get Niels alone.
Cat's voice drew his attention back.
He and Edith went below to break their fast, but it was not long before he returned without her.
Cat's mouth tightened.
The drink I had given him had obviously mostly worn off by then, for he would not even kiss me. He was most upset for Ollie, and disgusted by what he thought was your behaviour.
She said with irritation.
And that is when I realized the only chance I probably have of experiencing that pleasure Ollie gave you was with Ollie himself. You are not sleeping with my husband,
Jetta said grimly. Cat laughed and taunted her.
Oh, come now, sister, do not be so greedy. Mother always admonished us to share our toys. Ollie is not a toy. He is the man I love. And my husband.
Ollie swallowed. It felt like his heart was swelling. He would never again doubt her love for him. Kat shrugged.
Which means he is the one man in this castle who will not reject me when I come to him as you. Instead, he will work hard to please me.
She gave a little shiver of anticipated pleasure, and then added,
And who knows? If he is very, very good at it, as I suspect he will be, I may let him live a while, at least until I tire of him.
But you said you could not bear to look on his face!
Jetta almost howled.
I will snuff out all the candles and torches, she said simply. And if that does not work, and the fire reveals too much of my face, I will close my eyes. Besides, I doubt you saw much of his face when he was under your skirts.
Laughing at Jetta's expression, she added,
Actually, now that I've decided on it, I am looking forward to his pleasuring me, ugly or not. I enjoyed his kiss earlier.
He kissed you?
Jetta asked, sounding wounded, and Ollie clenched his hands, wishing he could throttle his wife's sister.
Aye, and it was.
Kat shivered happily, and breathed,
Oh, I am eager for more.
Ollie's mouth tightened at the very thought. It would be a cold day in hell before he would even touch the woman. Well, other than to apprehend her.
Speaking of which,
Kat said no.
He and the others should soon finish their search, and then he promised to return to claim his husbandly rights. So we really need to move this along so I can send one of the soldiers to fetch him back here. From what I have seen, I expect I will be naked on my back and moaning and groaning minutes after he comes through the door.
Over my dead body,
Jetta growled.
That is the plan, sister. Literally.
Kat said on a laugh.
I plan to kill you first, and since I cannot move you until things settle down, shove your dead body under the bed. Your husband will literally be giving me pleasure right over your dead body.
When Kat started toward Jetta, brandishing her knife, Ollie's heart nearly stopped in his chest. Chapter 21. He had left it too late, Ollie realized with dismay. Instead of intervening the moment he saw both women in there, he had allowed himself to be distracted by the tale his wife's sister told. Cursing, Ollie pressed on the lever to open the passage entrance to the small room and rushed inside. But he didn't get to Kat before she got to Jetta. She must have heard him. Perhaps the rustle of his clothes or a footfall gave him away. He didn't know, but before he could reach Kat, the crazy wench rushed to Jetta and moved behind her. In a heartbeat, she had dropped to her haunches so that Jetta hid most of her from view and placed her knife at Jetta's throat. Ollie froze at once, trying not to show the alarm coursing through him. He growled,
Put down the knife, Kat. You're caught.
I am not caught yet,
she assured him grimly, her gaze sliding from him to the passage entrance. Ollie glanced toward it, relieved to see that the passage looked empty. Alec had had the good sense not to follow him and was nowhere in sight. Turning back to the woman, he said,
You're right, and you didn't have to be. Let go of Jetta, and...
I am not a fool,
she interrupted dryly.
The minute I let her go, you will attack.
Her gaze slid to the passage and back again, and she urged Jetta to her feet as she said,
So, I think I will just take her with me.
I'm not a fool either, wench, Ollie growled. I can't you leave here with Jetta, she's as good as dead.
Jetta,
Kat said with disgust.
Her name is Sorka, or Sorry, as I like to call her, but it is not Jetta.
It is now, Ollie said, unperturbed. He'd noticed Jetta's wince at the unkind nickname.